by Ratio Architects, dedicated to defining spaces and creating downtown places across the Midwest. On the web at ratioarchitects.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where kids and parents can sing, clap, and participate in family entertainer Red Grammer's treasure trove of songs and dance to the delicious musical stew of Funkadaisy. Visit KrannertCenter.com for more information.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly show about computers. We take up this topic each month on the third Thursday of the month. I invite your questions about computers today for Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST 3. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, you can give us a call and talk to Peter. He will try and help out. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Good to see you.
It's always nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, would you like to start with something in particular this afternoon before we take some calls? No one's waiting at the moment, so...
Well, some of the news that's out is a new so-called itty-bitty computer that was just rolled out at the big technology show in Germany. It was codenamed Origami, and now it's simply called the ultra-portable computer, but it's a little bit larger, or it's the size of a large paperback book. Mm-hmm. What makes this remarkable, and unlike a Palm Pilot or the other sorts of handheld devices, is that it will be running a full version of Windows XP, and once the new version of Windows comes out in the end of this year, Windows Vista, it'll run that full version, which means any of the desktop applications that you run can run on this machine. It has built-in wireless, it has built-in Bluetooth, it has up to a 60 gigabyte hard drive built into it, so it's essentially a relatively full-powered machine. It won't fit in the pocket unless you've got really, you know, baggy
big
pants pockets. But it is a going to be an interesting machine. They're looking at a price point someplace between $600 and $1,000, depending on how much memory and such you've got on it. No keyboard, but if you're using it at an office or at home or someplace instead of on the road, the wireless a wireless keyboard connect to it, or it's got the appropriate ports to plug in a USB keyboard. And if you don't have that and you still want to use the keyboard functionality, you can even have the little screen display a keyboard on a touch screen and then sort of type directly on the screen. Or you can print because it's got the handwriting recognition. Microsoft is not making it, but about three companies so far have signed up and are going to be making this. And should be an interesting bit of technology.
Lightweight, easy to carry.
Lightweight, supposed
around?
To be. Again, not something you'll slip in a pocket, but a lot less to carry around than even the lightest full laptop. Although, of course, it doesn't have a keyboard, which is one of the reasons.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, we talk about at home, we talk about all these things coming together and sort of in one package. And I wonder if the portability scene is going to be the same thing. You'll have your laptop, your phone, and your iPod, kind of all that kind of thing in one device?
Well, I know a lot of people are wanting to do something like that because it would be a wonderful marketing and boost sales for whatever companies are successful with that. Just look at Apple with the iPod. I suspect that a one device do it all kind of product is not just around the corner. People really like their iPods, the little tiny things that fit in a shirt pocket, mm-hmm. and there's not going to be any time real soon something that small that you'd be able to interact with. You can't get a lot of information off of something iPod sized. By comparison, about the smallest that we can go now, and this is just a couple more details about this little formerly called Origami. Which I liked. I
like name. That name much
I like
better.
A lot of their code names. And then they come out with names that are not quite as exciting. It's about an inch thick. It's going to weigh about 2.5 pounds. And the screen on it is a 7-inch diagonal screen.
That's a good size.
So it's not bad at all. Yeah. So it should be interesting to see.
Well, you see people, you know, on campus, you know, you've got a laptop, you've got an iPod, and you've got a telephone, and it's all on the table at the coffee shop. And I'm thinking one of these days it'll be a whole lot more compact. And
well, and the recent news about BlackBerry being able to continue and settling with the patent infringement suit. But even the BlackBerry, the people who use it, I mean, it's an email device primarily, and so it's not really a telephone. But is that going to come around? And so it's still, if you're going on a trip someplace, you have to pack, if it's a long trip, not only do you pack your five or six devices, but you pack your five or six chargers, and you get this whole briefcase full of technology and various gadgets. So
when is the origami supposed to be available?
They expect to ship starting in April. Two of the companies, Samsung and Asus, and there's another Chinese manufacturer that's going to be aiming for June. So it should be out there in plenty of time, and I'm sure that we will see lots and lots of publicity and marketing going on for it.
No doubt.
And it will be, of course, pushed pretty hard come the holiday season, too. So
this is the Afternoon Magazine. Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon. This is the monthly program we do about computers. We call it Computers in You, and we take up the topic each month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST 3. If you'd like to talk with us this afternoon, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We've got a listener waiting on the toll-free line now, line 4. Good afternoon.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Okay, my radio is in the other room. I can hear the other radio, too, but it's not interfering with you, is it?
No.
Okay, good. I've been having problems with my computer for about a year, and it's gotten really slow. And I've tried to talk to different people, you know, around here locally to see if, at the store, see if I can do anything about it. And one of the things I've been told is that I need to get a firewall, and I've been told that maybe my computer is too slow because it's getting too old. And another possibility is that I downloaded SpyBot, and to my recollection, I've had more problems since I got SpyBot and when it says to delete. I mean, there's so many things on there, I don't know what's what necessarily since I'm not a computer person. But maybe I've deleted programs that actually help situation, I have a 98 Windows, and I'm wondering if it isn't, I wanted to know how to tell whether the computer is running really slow, and everybody that I've talked to says you can't tell, like you can tell on XP, or the memory thing, you know, how much memory there is.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, why don't you start asking me questions, because I'm not sure. The only thing I can tell you basically is it's running really slow, and if I go from page to page, I've been having problems. One more thing. It's been freezing on me. I mean, I'll be doing stuff and changing page, or I was trying to copy, print something through my scanner, and it froze, and I was trying to copy like something off of an email onto a document, and it froze, and it won't let me do it, which doesn't make sense. But just all kinds of little strange things are happening, and I'm wondering, is it really time for me to go get another computer? And I'm thinking just getting the tower.
Well, all the symptoms that you're describing are classic symptoms from a machine that is running a lot of unauthorized software, variously called spyware or adware. The fact that it's running slower than usual, yes, it's a Windows 98 machine, and that's fairly old technology now, and it's not going to run nearly as quickly as newer machines, but the fact that you've noticed that it dramatically slows down compared to what that same machine used to do with pretty much the same software.
Right.
The fact that other software or the computer is actually hanging up, freezing, and not able to handle things indicates conflicts, because not surprisingly, a lot of the software that you really don't want to have running, the spyware and the adware, are not written particularly well, or there may be hundreds of them all competing for the resources, which can bring the machine down to a crawl, as you have no doubt noticed. So, what are your options? I have seen some machines that have been, and the problem is once it starts, once you get some of the spyware or adware on it, a lot of them go out. It's sort of like somebody's gotten into your house, you're gone, and then they open it up and call all their friends and have everybody come in, and so they have this huge party. Well, that's what spyware and adware often does. It brings in additional spyware and adware so that your machine is just essentially overwhelmed. I've seen machines that have literally hundreds of competing spyware and adware programs running, and of course the poor machine can't really get anything accomplished. It's possible, if it's not too terribly infected, to run programs such as AdAware, such as SpyBot, and just let them, anything they suggest probably ought to be quarantined just or removed, just let them do it. But unless you, and those are free programs, shareware programs, right. But unless you actually go to a slightly more powerful program, often at a charge of $30 to $50 or so, there are some of these more recent versions of Trojan horses and spyware that are very difficult to remove because they install themselves in hidden places and keep one hidden program running that when it sees that the main program has been removed, reinstalls it before you can do much else. So it is, especially if it's been going on for some time, probably pretty thoroughly infected. That could have been prevented, although it doesn't do much good now, but for the future, by not only maintaining current antivirus software, but also the spyware blockers and a firewall that could be a software firewall. It may possibly be, because even in a totally cleaned up version, I guess that the Windows 98 machine is going to be a little bit slow at this point. So if you're thinking and the budget allows you to upgrade to a newer machine, that would eliminate the need to spend what could be hours trying to clean up the older version. You just want to get all of your current files, word processing documents and other such off of there, which could take a while, but the new machine with current up-to-date and a subscription to an updating service for antivirus, anti-spyware, and a firewall, which essentially a simple one comes with Windows XP now.
Okay, can I stop you just for a second?
Sure.
Let me ask you, and I don't want you to stop your train of thought either. Are you saying the spyware blocker and firewall are two different things?
The spyware, yes, they have some overlapping functions. The firewall essentially prevents programs. There are a couple of ways they function. They can prevent a program or somebody who is probing for weaknesses in your system from outside, from the internet, from gaining access. It essentially shuts the communication doors from the outside world to your computer other than the ones that you specifically open, such as to browse pages.
Okay, so firewall does that.
A firewall does that.
Okay.
A firewall, not the one that comes with Windows, but other firewalls that you can get from places like Zone Alarm and such, will also be a little bit more proactive. And any program already installed on your machine that attempts to communicate with the outside world, it'll say, hey, is it okay for this program to communicate? And of course, you would say yes for your email program and your web browser and such.
Okay.
Neither of those is going to protect you from if inadvertently clicking on a web page or downloading a program, or a lot of these things come in as what are called Trojans. There's a program that looks like it might be kind of neat, like a new toolbar or some nice cursors or something, but they come along with a payload that is going to actually be the spyware or the adware, and a firewall won't prevent that from being brought in because you've clicked to bring it in. So that's where the spyware blockers can help.
And give me names of those, because that's
okay. I would go to some of the programs, such as SpyBot, such as AdAware, both have programs that will run Norton. Symantec and Norton Utilities have a internet security suite that includes not only an antivirus program, but also a spyware blocker program, because spyware is not necessarily going to be represented as a virus. They're similar. You don't want either one of them, but those are some of the various companies.
Okay. 'Cause I looked at a Norton Security it says Norton Security something, and it supposedly is a combination of firewall, spyware.
Yes, it's several programs all bundled together. You can, from those companies, Norton among others, purchase just the antivirus part or just the firewall portion. But
it's okay to buy the bundle that has all three?
Yes.
Okay.
But again, it's going to be difficult to clean up an existing system. It's going to take some amount of time, and there's a point at which even dedicated PC professionals will say, we're just going to get the files off of here that you need and just wipe the entire hard disk and reinstall the operating system, because otherwise it might be an endless task to try to clean up hundreds of little malwares that it's kind of collectively called.
So my options going back to is either do what you just said, which is, sounds very tedious, if I can even do that myself, which actually I can't because I got it through a mail order, and I don't know if I could tell you the name of the company. I bought my computer. It's a great computer, except they say they sent me a restoration disk, and I am very fanatical about keeping things together, and I don't have it. And they won't give it to me. They want to sell it to me, and I'm not happy about that. Because I haven't needed it before, you know what I mean?
So, right.
It's like, I don't need it in the first year of warranty. Well, they don't want to give, you know, take care of it. But the second thing, so either is try to, you know, crash it or wipe it out and do it, or the second thing is to actually go buy a new computer.
Well, if you're in the market for a new computer, that is the simplest because you're, A, going to have a much faster machine. It's going to have the current protection on it. And you know, avoid buying it from the same mail order company that you got the last one, obviously.
Right.
But that would certainly fix all the problems. But, of course, that's kind of the fixing the problems by throwing some money at it. But sometimes that may be the best thing.
Right. Now, can I ask you another real quick question?
Real quick, because I've got a number of people waiting.
Okay. And I can hang up because I don't want to ask
okay.
you more, because I'm good at asking too many. But tell us what's a good, like, if I want to get something, and I know there's a variety, but what's a basic but decent computer to get, like a tower. I mean, all the.
What at a minimum, right? Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Minimum computer. There are several things to look at. Almost any machine that you can get that's at a price of $500 to $600 or more will be better than what you've currently got. Depends on your budget. There are some in terms of brands. Any of the major brands would be fine. There's Hewlett Packard. There's Dell. There's Gateway. There's IBM, and all of those. And many others that I haven't mentioned. You will want to, for future compatibility, make sure that the amount of RAM, the actual active memory it has, is a absolute minimum of 256 megabytes, and you'd be better off getting 512 if you can afford it. Almost any machine you have now is going to have at least a 60 gigabyte hard drive. That's the minimum. Better off would be 120 to 150 or 250. It's getting very cheap. And almost any current processor would be fine. So it's hard to go wrong with any of the name brands that you'll recognize.
Okay. They want to move on now and talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Hi.
Hi. Actually, my question is very much similar to what the first caller covered. And so basically, I'm trying to learn more about spyware, firewalls, and so forth. Can you recommend a class or resources that I'd be able to educate myself on?
Well, I'm not aware of any particular classes. There may be some. I have not actually checked to see what local community colleges are offering. In terms of how firewalls work and information about spyware and how you can protect spyware, there are a lot of good resources on the web. For example, there's a site called HowStuffWorks.com. Mm-hmm. And so you can see how firewalls work. It's not necessarily going to recommend particular firewalls, but if you do a search on the web for firewalls or for spyware, you will find all kinds of references there. There are in some of the bookstores, some of the larger bookstores, some fairly simple introduction to computers. They're on the order of the Computers for Dummies book, but not necessarily that brand. And the recent editions are going to talk about computer security, dealing with firewalls, dealing with viruses, dealing with spyware and adware and Trojan horses and all these various things, and including dealing with some things that is not really software but is currently one of the major problems, the so-called phishing exploits in which people try to fool you into entering your bank account and other information at very legitimate-looking websites.
Actually, that's probably more of what I'd be interested in is just computer security in general. And you said there would be books at the bookstore then.
Yes, there are. And you can also do a search. There are several things you could do. Check at the bookstore. Go to one of the if you want to check online first, go to one of the large bookstore sites such as Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or Borders.com and type in computer security. And maybe also throw in the keyword beginning or introduction because there's some fairly high-level things there.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there are some excellent resources that you'd find either on the web or in books that you could find in the stores or via the web.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, good luck. Next, we talk with a listener on line two. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I want to combine three video tracks that have audio plus a separate audio track. This is of a wedding. And edit it and make a DVD. What video editing would you recommend? How would you approach that?
Are you using a Windows or a Macintosh platform?
XP machine.
Okay. I do not have off the very top of my head because I'm doing most of that on the Macintosh side with iMovie and such. So I don't have right off the top of my head a recommendation. Let me just take a look at something. See what we can find. There are a number of resources that you can find about video and DVD movies. So there's a home video. There are home video sites. I just did a quick site about a quick search for create DVD. And there are a number of software packages. ULEAD is one that comes up. It's a sponsored link, but I'm well familiar with that site, ULEAD.
Okay.
And so I would check with that. A lot of it depends, of course. Running Windows XP, you're going to want to be sure that you're running it on a fairly recent machine because those are going to require a fair amount of computer resources. Running it on a five-year-old machine might be problematic. Running
it's
it on
an
a machine...
It's an AMD 4400 dual core with 2 gig of RAM.
That should certainly be adequate for the hardware. And I would simply take a look, and perhaps somebody will call in with a particular suggestion. Of course, all the folks who do this on the Macintosh side do it without really worrying too much about it. There are high-end programs, but I'm assuming we want to do something that's relatively more affordable.
Right, and I didn't know if you had any experience with that.
I have very little on the Windows side with that.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Next, we talk with a listener on line three. Hello.
Hello. Quick question. Mini PCI is the standard card used in notebooks and some appliances.
Okay, yes.
I've got one appliance with a B. What do you call it? 802G.
Okay.
802.11.
Yeah, it's the wireless. Yeah, the mini PC adapter.
Right. Can I drop a G card in the same slot without having to do major kernel changes or upgrades to the software?
It depends on the device. But the general rule of thumb is that if it's a standard mini PC adapter, you should be able to any card that you put in there, such as one with a 802.11g wireless adapter, which is the faster communication standard, should probably work. The worst case will be that it simply won't function properly, and you can take it back out and put in the previous one. But it really depends upon how the BIOS or the basic operating system of whatever device you're putting it in has been set up. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Let's talk with the listener now on line four, the toll-free line. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. Two questions, and I'll get off. The first one, it was just like the first woman that called, and finally it's XP and it died. It wouldn't allow me to back up anything on my CD drive as it was doing that. So when I took it in, I had a lot of photographs, and they weren't able to get anything off of the hard drive. Now it's just a paperweight on my desk. Is there any possible way to take that somewhere to get the photograph files off? And the second question is, I'm afraid to use my credit card on places like Amazon or all the others, and a lot of people laugh at me for that, but what is the safety in that? Thanks.
Okay. Regarding the first question, and it certainly is possible that a computer gets so corrupted, as you had mentioned, that it's almost impossible to deal with, but all is not lost because... if you have either a friend or somebody who's slightly technologically astute, what you can do is simply remove the hard drive from your current computer. Essentially, you open up the case and take out the hard drive, being very careful not to give it any static electricity shocks and such, and then plug it in as a second hard drive on somebody else's machine. Since it's not going to be booting, it's only going to be sitting there as a storage device, as long as nobody tries to somewhat foolishly run any programs from your hard drive as a second drive, it'll simply be a repository of all these files, and they can simply drag the JPEG or other photograph files off of that hard drive onto their own and then burn it. So you're just using it as a very passive storage device. The problem with getting anything off of it while it's in your machine is that the computer operating system is having to start up from that hard drive, and it's so corrupted that obviously it doesn't work. But the hard drive, assuming that the hard drive itself has not been damaged, and there are a couple of really nasty viruses that tend to mess that up, but it's unlikely that's happened to you, and you can get it back in a relatively simple, if you consider opening up the case and removing the hard drive, simple. If you had really valuable data there and the hard drive simply was not functioning properly, there are companies, and you can do a search for a hard drive recovery that can recover it from, in some cases, just amazingly damaged hard drives, but it is not cheap. They charge a fair amount of money to do that, several hundred dollars perhaps, or even a few thousand if it's a large hard drive. But if you really had to have the data, if it was your life's work, that could be worth doing. I would suspect in your case that just plugging this into another machine, it would have to be another machine that has the same compatibility, the same kind of hard drive, the same way of communicating. So if it was plugged into a PCI port, or if it was a serial ATA or something. But anybody who's going to be comfortable helping you take that apart would be able to do it. So short answer, yes, you can probably get it off.
And the credit card.
Credit card question. You're not really being foolish, because there are a lot of sites out there that are going to try to do it, but I'm generally not too concerned. There are a couple of things you can do to minimize your risk. One, make sure that you have typed the address of the place you're going, such as Amazon, directly. You don't click on a link in some email you've received, because that might not direct you to the real site. It's always good to look for the little secure padlock icon or the little key icon, although that's not 100% fail-safe. And most credit card companies, now to just take this one step further, will guarantee the safety of your use of the credit cards online. You are, by law, limited to a liability of only $50, but every credit card company that I'm aware of waives that liability. So if you should have the misfortune of having something happen, then you're not really going to be out any money at all. The credit card may have to be reissued. You certainly don't go to any sites and give them things like your Social Security number or any account numbers. You don't give them a PIN number. No legitimate place will ever ask you for your PIN number on that. Just the credit card number and the expiration date, and you should be relatively safe.
And isn't there also, didn't we talk about, this was some time back, where you could have essentially a card. You can have an account loaded up with $100 worth of credit or whatever.
They're called virtual credit cards often.
Virtual credit cards.
And they are from, Citibank is doing it now, Discover is doing it. And essentially it generates a one-time use credit card number. It's with software that you've downloaded to your machine. You have to identify yourself, of course, and log on to the site with your own name and password. But then it will generate a one-time credit card number that can only be used once. So if somebody steals it, it doesn't do them any good. And you can, in some cases, even limit it to the amount that it's going to be worth. So if you're making a $98 purchase, you say, this is a $100 credit card, one-time use.
Okay, very good.
Not all cards are doing that, but some are.
Some are. Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, are you there?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I ran the Adaware scan thingy.
Yes.
And after it, I guess, did whatever it does, this red, scary-looking bug jumped out at me, and in three different places in red, it said something like 10 items. And I had the sense that it wanted me to remove those items, but there was no way, absolutely no way, that I could figure out how to do that. I tried, you know, the finish, I tried continue, whatever. I tried every button on the screen, nothing.
Well, there is, I don't think we've got Adware installed on this machine, and I can't quite visualize the way it is. There is, Adware is a little bit odd. You do have to, there is someplace, it's not real obvious, it's not like a next button, mm-hmm. But there is an option someplace. Boy, and if I could bring up Adware on this machine, I would tell you, but I'm not entirely sure. Let me see, I don't even think it's installed on this machine. No, it's not. So I can't tell you directly. Adware does, of course, warn you that occasionally things it identifies as Adware may be necessary. If you've downloaded some program such as, one example might be WeatherBug, a little program that sits there and tells you the weather and the forecast and such. And if you get the free version of that, it will only work if it's able to show you little ads every once in a while. But assuming that it's not that, there is a way of removing. You know, I wish I could bring this up on my screen, but it is there. Try going to the Adware site, lavasoft.com, and look at some of their. They'll have some online tutorials or some help screens, which should quite possibly show you where you go after it's identified them. There may well be help in the program that you've got as well, but again, I wish I could bring that up.
I tried the help, and that was worthless.
Okay. Try the online site. There is also, I'm almost sure that if you go to the Lavasoft site, that you would be able to find some sort of a forum. So let's see. There's all these various products. There's purchase. There's partners. There's spyware. There's support. Support for the home users. So there are a number of... there's a place where you could actually leave email and a question for customer service, for technical assistance with the products.
On this Lavasoft?
Yes, that's the company behind Adware.
Is that Lavasoft?
Yes, just like the Molten Lava.
Okay.
That's lavasoft.com.
Okay. All right. I'll try that.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You know, I did this recently, and I can't remember. But I had the same kind of problems, like, okay, where do I go from here?
And it is, I mean, I had to look the first time, and I've been doing this stuff for years, but it is there somewhere.
And we should have that on this computer.
Do
we have a
spy bot
on here?
No, you don't. Yeah, 27 viruses. No, I'm kidding. you do have SpyBot. Have SpyBot on this machine.
Right.
You do not have, as far as I can tell, Adware. And, of course, the question was, and SpyBot can find some of it as well. But
right. It's
not real obvious. It's just a little
SpyBot
text.
SpyBot is easier. It's foolproof.
Neither program is totally self-sufficient. It'd be good to have at least a couple on run.
Have both
unlike, of them. Unlike virus software, you only want one antivirus software because they kind of interfere with one another and slow things down more.
Well, I remember it was maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I did the SpyBot update and the Adware thing, and I did SpyBot first, and it found some things, and it got rid of that, and then I went to Adware, and it found further things.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to have
to do
both.
A couple of them, yes.
Let's take another call. Listener on line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a couple of things. First of all, yesterday morning when I went to turn on my computer and press the button on the tower, nothing happened. The button just went in, and I'm saying it went in considerably. And so I
kind of went in and stayed in?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the thing is that obviously I couldn't get anything going, and so I called my tech and took it into them, and they said they didn't know what would be the situation. They'd have to get into it and look. So is that a common problem?
I wouldn't say it's common. I've seen something like that before. The switch actually, mechanically, some physical structure of it fails a little bit, doesn't make contact. Sometimes I'm able to just kind of jiggle it around a little bit, get it to pop back out, and then, very carefully press it in again. But
well, it just seemed like it was loose, like it came loose from the structure or something. I don't know. You have that little bit of space when you push it in,
right,
that you know, but this one, it just went in.
Well, and that sounds like something, perhaps some mounting. So I think the techs were right. You'd have to take a look at it to see, but it could quite possibly be something relatively simple.
Well, that's, I'm hoping it is, and it won't cost me a lot, you know, but anyway. Also, concerning the various anti-spyware and such, I have Adware.
Yes.
And my spy bot, this, about a week ago, is still on my homepage screen, but yet when I press it, it comes up with a list of things, and I can't get the SpyBot.
So you're attempting to launch SpyBot, but it just comes up. It doesn't actually start the program?
Right.
Well.
Now, should I remove everything and start over?
Certainly reinstalling SpyBot might do it, or making sure that you've got the updates. Do you have, if you launch the SpyBot program, you can't even bring up...
I just get a list of things which I don't comprehend.
Okay.
And none of them allow me to...
And there's no way to move past that screen.
Right.
I don't know what screen that actually would be.
Well, I wish I could bring it up for you now, but unfortunately the tower is somewhere else.
Yeah, well, with a switch that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But certainly reinstalling it might well take care of it.
But should I remove the other?
The current version? That's always a safe thing to do. You could probably find that if you simply go to the Windows control panel, start control panel settings,
right,
and then, or settings and then control panel, and then add remove programs, and you'll see SpyBot listed there, and just let it run its removal program. If it doesn't remove, or if it's somehow been damaged, then you could just try to install on top of it.
Well, I don't know why it would happen. The thing is, when my tech advised that I run all these programs twice a week.
Not bad advice, especially if you have a teenager who's surfing the web or a preteen. But
well, how about an older person who just likes to surf?
Well, that too, but maybe not quite as risky a behavior as the young folks. But yes, it's definitely good advice. And I would, if it's not working, the simplest thing would be to try to remove it and then try to reinstall.
Okay, now I have the Microsoft anti-spyware, which, you know, came with my Windows thing that runs every morning at 2 a.m.
That's like, is that the Microsoft Defender? Or
I guess it must be. It's something which has been on there since I had the Windows installed on my machine.
So it's actually a spyware as opposed to checking for Windows updates, because that's something else that Windows
will do.
Well,
they do updates.
Okay.
Yeah, and about the first or second Tuesday of every month, it does an update.
Yeah, that's known as Patch Tuesday.
Yeah, okay.
So the good news is that there should not really be much interference between multiple spyware programs, especially those that are run as a scan. Again, as I'd mentioned for another caller earlier, you don't want to be running two antivirus programs
at the same
time.
Well, that's what I don't want to do either.
Spyware is not antivirus.
Okay.
You need something like the... Norton or McAfee.
Well,
or
I have AVG. He installed AVG.
Okay, that's fine. So that's the only antivirus program you need, but that is not checking for spyware or adware.
Right. And I have Adware, and I had SpyBot.
I would simply try to reinstall SpyBot.
Right. Now, on the AVG, about 4 days ago, they came up that I had two Trojans, and they healed them.
Which is a good thing to have happen. That simply means that you had perhaps clicked on something that looked like it was a useful program, but unbeknownst to you, there was a hidden agenda on two of those programs, and they were going to do other things that you don't want them to do, like report back your surfing habits and such.
Right.
So that's good news.
Okay, finally, excuse me. Where do I go to get information about how to transfer files from my, computer disk, or, the actual...
The built-in hard drive, yes.
Hard drive an order that I wish, and put them in the right. I have 17 different CDRWs.
Okay.
That I use to transfer things to, but I want to put them in certain folders within, you know, their titles.
So you want to take files that are on your computer and put them on a particular CDRW in a particular folder?
Yes.
That's assuming that those CDRWs are being recognized by Windows as simply having, as being essentially another hard drive, although it's somewhat slow one. You should be able to just drag and drop into place. There is you're running Windows XP, I presume?
Yes, uh-huh.
And you can certainly, Windows XP will periodically probably pop up a box saying, by the way, we can treat this thing as a, just as another hard drive for you. And so that is...
Well, now I do have Nero.
Okay, so if you've got Nero...
I was told that was much simpler to use than the Windows.
Yes, it is, and that should support it. I don't use Nero. I know a number of people who do.
Well, I found it very convenient.
Good.
As opposed to...
Well, it
Windows.
Should make it possible for you to drop those things wherever you may wish, since they are CDRWs. Now, realize that those can eventually get filled as well. They're not
limitless. Oh, yes, I know my limitations on each CDRW, right. But the thing is that it ends up that I have a list of the various things that I've transferred one by one, but I also would like to be able to put them within certain folders, and that's why I'm wondering, is there some service on the computer that I can go to in order to do a tutorial?
I am unaware of any tutorials. Mostly you're just dealing with things such as with Windows Explorer and just dragging and dropping them from one place to another. I'm unaware of any particular tutorial for doing that.
Well, I sure wish there were one because I haven't been able to make the jump.
Well, I'll keep that in mind and see if I can find anything, talk to anyone who is doing that, and perhaps next time I'm on.
I would appreciate that. And wish me luck on my button.
Good luck on your button, yes.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me toss out one thing. One of the possibilities for the person who had gotten the entire list of programs that Adaware had recognized, they may want to try to find a tab that says quarantine on it. It's not necessarily clear that that's what you want to do because it doesn't say, and now do this, but the quarantine tab may well be what they're looking for.
And our thanks to Henry Frain, our technical director, for passing that possibility on to us this afternoon. Let's try and squeeze in one more call. Listener on line 3, but we'll have to make it quick. Line 3, hi.
Hi. I have a G3 iBook that I just bought new. I'm getting a DVD upgrade, and I'm going to install operating system 10.4.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know what kind of antivirus, spyware, firewall stuff that I need.
You definitely need antivirus software. Some Mac users kind of think that they're immune, but they're not. And the best, I'm going to have to do a check. I let our tech do a lot of that on our Macintosh side of things, which is fairly handy. And so let's see what we can find. Norton makes an antivirus product. There are a number of others. I would say McAfee, both two of the major companies that I deal with primarily, Norton and McAfee, both have antivirus programs for the Macintosh for System 10.
Okay. What about spyware and firewalls?
Spyware, there aren't going to be quite as many options there. Again, I would simply suggest doing a web search. There is a couple of companies here that I don't quite recognize, but there is, for example, a spywareguide.com, which gives a list of a number of spyware and adware. So I would simply do a Google search for spyware and Macintosh, or adware and Macintosh, both in the search. And
what about Macintosh? What about Apple itself? Could you go to Apple and say, you know, put query in there in their site
and that would be another
recommended?
Yes. You could certainly go to the Apple site and do a search for the same sort of thing, because it's in their interest in not having people have difficulties with their Macs.
And would that be an Apple product, or they would direct me to some other?
I'm not sure. The operating system may include some protection, but primarily I think they're going to direct you to others. Apple has a lot of stuff that they do themselves, but a lot of stuff for antivirus and others, they let other companies who are dedicated to do that spend their resources.
No doubt they would have recommendations.
They
for
would
you.
No doubt have recommendations, yes.
Okay. And
okay.
One other quick question. What kind of problems would my 5-year-old run into surfing through Wiggles and Disney Channel and stuff like that?
Probably none. The problem is, of course, if they get out of those sites, they may be tempted if they see a link to get a nice, you know, little cartoon character. And if they're not in one of these sites that's relatively safe, it could include a payload. It could be a Trojan. So you want to keep an eye on what they're doing. But at 5, it's probably not nearly as much of a problem as it is at 7 or 8.
Okay. There we'll leave it. Peter, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Helping out our listeners. Peter Kimball is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University of Illinois Technology Consortium, FAST 3. And this program about computers, it's a topic we take up each month on the